Okay, good morning, everybody. I hope you're well. And I'm going to take a little break today from Shemitah. And I want to talk about Tu B'Shvat. But as I always say, this is not an inspirational shiur, so I'm not going to give you anything inspiring. I want to discuss the halachic aspects of Tu B'Shvat. And we'll see that Tu B'Shvat has certain halachos that are very, very significant. And later, the Mekubalim gave a deeper spiritual meaning to it, but one needs to know the halachic background as well. Interestingly, though, Tu B'Shvat has some very interesting ramifications with Shemitah. So in point of fact, there will be an intersection between Shemitah and Tu B'Shvat. First, the first Mishnah in Maseches Rosh Hashanah tells us that there are 4 days of the year that are called Rosh Hashanah, beginning of a year. The first date is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, is considered to be the beginning of a year. And the Gemara explains that this refers to the reign of Jewish kings. And that is, if a Jewish king became a king in the month of Adar, even just 1 month, as soon as Nisan comes, he is beginning the second year of his reign. So it makes no difference if he became king in Nisan, and when the second Nisan comes, he's entering year two, or even if he became king in Adar, so he only ruled for 1 month. When Nisan comes, it's year number two. And even if it was the 29th day of Adar and he was only king for 1 day, when Nisan comes, it's year number two. So that's the first Rosh Hashanah. It is a Rosh Hashanah for Malachim, for Malchei Yisrael. The second Rosh Hashanah is Elul. Now, Elul is a Rosh Hashanah for a particular mitzvah, only for that particular mitzvah, and that is Maaser Behema. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, this is not practiced today, you would take 1/10 of your sheep or your goats or your cattle, and you would make it a korban, and you would give it to Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. This is called the Maaser of Behema, but the halacha is that you cannot take from 1 year to another year. So an example would be the following. Let's say I had 5 lambs that were born in 1 year and 5 lambs that were born in another year. You cannot combine them to take off Maaser Behema. And if I had 10 of 1 year and 10 of the other year, so I owe Maaser of 2 animals, I can't just take 2 of the new year to cover the new year and the old year, or 2 of the old year to cover the old year and the new year. Rather, every single year, there must be a separate separation. Meaning, if I have 10 and 10, one animal must come from the old year, and one animal must come from the new year. As a result, it is critical that we have a definition. When does the year change for purposes of Maaser Behema? And the answer is, the Gemara gives different reasons for this. The answer is, it is Elul. In other words, an animal that is born before Elul cannot be combined with an animal that is born after Elul. That's what it means. Biachad bi'Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Lamaser Behema. The third Rosh Hashanah is what we call Rosh Hashanah, and that is the first day of Tishrei, which is the beginning of a year. That is the day that Hashem judges us, etc. So that's the one Rosh Hashanah that we indeed call Rosh Hashanah. Although in the Torah itself, the Torah never refers to Rosh Hashanah as Rosh Hashanah. It talks about a holiday on the first day of the 7th month, because in the Torah, all the months are counted from Nisan, and therefore Tishrei, so we must be the only religion or the only group in the world that celebrates the beginning of our year in the 7th month of the year. We don't celebrate it the 1st month of the year, we celebrate it the 7th month. Okay, now the final Rosh Hashanah is in Shvat. And there's a machloka, and that's called Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanot, the new year for trees. And there's actually a machloka Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, what date in Shavat is Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanot. According to Beit Shammai, it's Rosh Chodesh Shvat, which in a way is consistent because every other Rosh Hashanah is Rosh Chodesh. Beis Hillel says Chamisha Asar Bishvat, the 15th of Shvat, and as is usually the case, 99 out of 100 times, actually a higher percentage than that, although it's not 100%, when we have a machlokes, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, the halacha is we follow Beis Hillel. So therefore, from the Mishnah, it does emerge that there is a festive day that is called the 15th of Shvat, Tu B'Shvat, and that is called Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanot. The question is, though, what does it mean to be a Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanot? What exactly is the halachic meaning of this? So it's for Orla and for Truman and Meisher, a number of things. So in order to understand this, you have to have a lot of halachic background, which has nothing to do with the Tu B'Shvat Seder per se, although in an indirect way it does. And that is, first, for Truma and Maser, we know that the produce that grows in Eretz Yisrael, you have to separate the Truma and you give it to a Kohen. In the time of the Mikdash, we don't give it to a Kohen today. We separate it because of ritual impurity, we don't. But technically, you would give the Truma to the Kohen, and the first tithe, 10%, you would give to a Levi. But then we have a second tithe, which is called either Maser Sheni or Maser Ani, that depends on the year of the Shemitah cycle. Maser Sheni, in the time of the temple, would mean you would take off a second 10% of your crop, and you would bring it to Yerushalayim, and you would eat it, consume it in Yerushalayim. Or if it was hard to transport, you could redeem it on money, take the money to Yerushalayim, this would be the walls part of Yerushalayim, and buy food and consume it there. That's called Maser Sheni. And Maser Sheni is separated of the produce of the first year of the Shemitah cycle, the second year, the fourth year, and the fifth year. 1, 2, 4, 5. The second, so Truma and Maser Rishon, you separate every year of the Shemitah cycle, except Shemitah. Maser Sheni, you separate year 1, 2, 4, and 5. Year 3 and 6, instead of a Maser Sheni that you take to Yerushalayim, the 10%, the second 10% is distributed to the poor, and that is called Maser Ani. So depending on the year of the 6 years, now Shemitah itself, we've already said a number of times, you do not take off any Trumos or Masros from Shemitah produce, because Shemitah produce is Hefker, anybody could take it, the poor, the rich, there is no tithing on Shemitah produce. So understand the idea here. For 6 years, 1 through year 6, you separate the Truma, which goes to the Kohen, and the Maser Rishon that goes to the Levi. That's every year, 6 years, 6 out of 7. Year 1, 2, 4, and 5, there is a second Maser, which is Maser Sheni that is taken to Yerushalayim to be consumed or redeemed on money, where the money is taken to Yerushalayim and you buy food in Yerushalayim to consume it. That is called Maser Sheni. Year 3 and 6, the Maser Sheni is replaced with an equivalent tithe, 10%, but that simply goes to the Aniyim, and they don't have to eat it in Yerushalayim. They can eat it anywhere they want, and that is called Maser Ani. Then we come to the Shemitah year, in which there is no Trumos and Masros at all for produce of the Shemitah year. Now, be sure you understand this. If you have any produce from the 6th or earlier that you have not given Truma or Maser from, you must separate that even on Shemitah. We're not saying Shemitah, there's no Chiyuv of Trumas and Masros on pre-Shemitah produce. There certainly is, but on Shemitah produce, there is no Truma or Maser. Now, the issue once again becomes, when does a year begin? Right? Because the second year you give Maser Sheni, the third year you give Maser Ani. If I have produce, how do I know what year to assign it to? Let's say I planted it in year 2 and I harvested it in year 3. So number one, here is the rule. For Maser purposes, the year changes in Tishrei. regular Rosh Hashanah. So consequently, if I have now that gives rise to another question. Okay, the year changes in Tishrei, but what activity determines the year that a fruit or a vegetable belongs to? What if I planted it in this year, I harvested it in this year? So here you need to know that there's a difference between grain and vegetables. Fruit is going to be different totally. Let's take grain and vegetables. Grain is assigned to the year that it reached one third of its complete ripening. So that means if I planted grain in year number two, which is a Maser Sheni year, and it reached a third of its growth, I planted it towards the end of the year, before Tishrei, even though two thirds of its growth occurred in the next year, year three, and I harvested it in year three, it is considered to be a year two produce. And the tithe that you give will be the Maser Sheni tithe rather than the Maser Ani tithe. Okay, this is called Havaat Shalish. Grain is assigned to the year in which it reached a third of its growth. And the relative date or the relevant date is Tishrei. Havaat Shalish before Tishrei, it belongs to the old year for purposes of which Maaser you give. Havaat Shalish after Tishrei, it belongs to the new year for purposes of whatever Maaser you give. Maaser Sheni, Maaser Ani, etc. Now, that is for grain. What about for vegetables? So vegetables too have Tishrei as their date, but the relevant event that determines what year a vegetable belongs to is actual harvesting, lakita. Therefore, that means if I was planting tomatoes in year number two, even if the tomatoes are 100% ready for picking, but I did not actually pick them till after Rosh Hashanah of the next year, they belong to the next year and not the old year, because yerakot are determined, the year in which they are allocated to is the year in which they were harvested, not the year that they ripened. Now, as a result, the relevant event for grain and for vegetables will be different. For grain, the relevant event is going to be Havaat Shalish. For vegetables, the relevant event is going to be Lakita. But the common denominator between grains and vegetables is that the demarcation point is Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei. In other words, the before and after point for whatever is your relevant event is going to be Echad B'Tishrei. When we come to fruit, it gets more complicated because number one, fruit has a different event, which isn't that bad, but more complicating is fruit has a different new year. And that is number one. The event that determines what year a fruit belongs to is not Havaat Shalish, and it's not harvesting. It is what is called Chanata. Now, Chanata means budding, the producing of a bud. Now, those of you that are familiar with fruit trees, and I actually cannot say that I'm intimately familiar, but fruit trees generally produce some type of flower, a perech. And when the flower falls off, there's a little bud that is produced. And that bud, of course, is the from which the fruit is going to grow. So the appearance of budding determines what year a fruit belongs to. But the Rosh Hashanah for fruits is the, we pasken like Beis Hillel, the 15th of Shabbat. Meaning the following. A fruit that produced a bud, I mean, there's no fruit yet, but the tree that produced a bud prior to the 15th of Shvat belongs to the old year, even though the ripening and the harvesting of the fruit occurred afterwards. A fruit that did not, or a tree that did not produce a bud until after Tu B'Shvat, or Tu B'Shvat or after, that bud belongs to the new year for purposes of tithing. So this is a pretty, it's complicated maybe, but this is a pretty undramatic implication of Rosh Hashanah Lilanot, and that is Chanata before Tu B'Shvat belongs to the old year. Chanata after Tu B'Shvat belongs to the new year. That it is Tu B'Shvat that is Rosh Hashanah Lilanot. Now, the truth of the matter is, B'derech Klal, there will be almost no trees in Eretz Yisrael, at least, that will produce a bud before Tu B'Shvat. I mean, that's really the point. It's going to be very rare. I mean, the earliest tree is the Shaked, right? You may have, you know, the Israeli folk song for Tu B'Shvat that I remember learning in first grade, Hashkedia Porachat. I will not sing it for you. V'shemesh Paz Zorachat. Shkedia, because an almond is the very, very first tree. In fact, that's why it's Shaked. Shaked means to hurry up. So Shkedim are called the hurry up fruit because they are indeed the very, very first fruit that ripens of all of the trees. Nevertheless, they will typically ripen after Tu B'Shvat. And not only, they'll typically produce a bud before Tu B'Shvat. I'm sorry. They will typically produce a bud after Tu B'Shvat and ripen shortly thereafter. Because again, Chazal described the agricultural cycle that the sap from which all fruits are produced rises in the trees on or around Tu B'Shvat. That's why it's the new year of the trees. So technically, to find a fruit that produced buds or a tree that produced buds before Tu B'Shvat is going to be rare, although it's possible, because when Chazal say the sap comes up, I mean, obviously, it's not going to be B'diyuk on the 15th. It might be the 14th, the 13th, depending on the year, depending on the tree. But technically, if Chanata was pre-Tu B'Shvat, it belongs to the old year. If Chanata is post-Tu B'Shvat, or I'm sorry, Tu B'Shvat or later, it belongs to the new year. Okay, so that's an important halacha of Trumas and Masrus. Now, he. Yes, yes, yeah. No, okay. It's Tu B'Shvat to Tu B'Shvat, which creates a tremendous complication because the definition of a year for a tree is different than the definition of a year for vegetables or grain. Tu B'Shvat to Tu B'Shvat. Now, this creates a fascinating anomaly with respect to Shemitah. And let me explain what the issue is. Shemitah is not at all defined by Tu B'Shvat. Shemitah is from Tishrei to the 29th of Elul, Tishrei to Tishrei. So here we have a very interesting anomaly. That actually means that year one after Shemitah for fruit trees is going to be a very long year, and year six is going to be a short year, meaning normally a year is 12 months. I mean, for vegetables, it's Tishrei to Tishrei. For grain, it's Tishrei to Tishrei. And normally for fruit, it's Tu B'Shvat to Tu B'Shvat. But when you have a Shemitah, that's not going to be the case. Now, let me explain this. Let's say we have the sixth year of Shemitah, of the Shemitah cycle. Now, for vegetables and grain, it's pretty simple. If a vegetable was harvested in the sixth year at any point, Maser Ani. If grain reached a shalish in the sixth year, Maser Ani. And even if it was it ripened during Shemitah, it is not Perot Shviyat. It does not have Kedushat Shviyat because everything is based on Havoat Shalish. Now, with respect to fruit, however, any fruit that has chanata, this is the sixth year we're talking about, between Tishrei and Tu B'Shvat, belongs to year five. It does not belong to year six. Okay? So the only peirot that belong to year six is the chanata after Tu B'Shvat. But the problem is, the chanata after Tu B'Shvat, if it happened after Tishrei, it belongs to the Shemitah year. So the only peirot that will be subject to the trumas and the masros of year six is the chanata from Tu B'Shvat to Tishrei, a little more than half a year. Because although you would normally go from Tu B'Shvat to Tu B'Shvat, you don't, because once Tishrei comes, it's Shemitah. So that means for peirot, the chanata that occurred before Tu B'Shvat of year six belongs to year five. The chanata that occurs after Tu B'Shvat on year six belongs to year six, but only until Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei, because any chanata of fruit that occurs after Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei belongs to Shemitah, and it doesn't have Trumas and Masros at all. So year six for Peirot is only going to be a little bit more than half a year. Now, the year after Shemitah is exactly the same problem in reverse. Normally, any chanata that's pre-Tu B'Shvat belongs to the old year. Now, that would indicate, standing alone, that peirot that produced the bud, Tishrei after Shemitah, before Tu B'Shvat, you might think belongs to Shemitah. Not true, because Shemitah is Tishrei to Tishrei. So as a result, the peirot before Tu B'Shvat are going to still be year one, Trumot, Masrot, Maser Rishon, and that year will go until the Tu B'Shvat of year two, which means, in other words, the year after Shemitah for fruit is going to be a year and a half. Okay, I know it's a little complicated. This is only a problem for trees, for fruit. It is not a problem for vegetables or grain. That's a very straightforward. Vegetables and grain will always have 12 months forever, or 13 months in a leap year for every year. In which it's year one, year two, year three, year four, year five, year six, year seven. But with Ilanot, we do have this issue that on one hand, Rosh Hashanah Ilanot is Tu B'Shvat. That's one idea. The other idea is that Shemitah is Tishrei to Tishrei and Tu B'Shvat doesn't enter into the calculus. So that's going to result in the anomaly of a long year for trees and a short year for trees. Year six will be a short year for Ilanot, and year one after Shemitah will be a long year for Ilanot. Okay, so that is the first implication. Yeah. Yes, that actually means that the Aniyim are going to be a little bit of a disadvantage. On the other hand, one could say that since on Shemitah, they are free to harvest everything. So in a sense, Shemitah gives them a compensation for what they lost. Now, the second implication of Rosh Hashanah Lilanot is the law of Orla. Now, Orla is a very, very important law because Orla is one of the few agricultural laws that apply even outside of Eretz Yisrael. So Truma, Maser only applies for Eretz Yisrael produce. Orla applies even in Chutz La'aretz. That is called a Halacha, Lamoshe Misinai. Now, what does Orla mean? So Orla essentially says the fruit of the first 3 years is forbidden, must even be destroyed. Now, I just want to clarify a misunderstanding that some people occasionally have. I'm sure you don't have that, but just in case. Some people understand it. I can't eat the fruit within 3 years of the tree's planting, but once the 3 years have passed, I can eat the fruit. Absolutely not. Whatever is Orla is permanently prohibited. Orla fruit can never be eaten. Okay, so anything that belongs to the first 3 years of tree planting is usher forever. It's not mutter after the 3 years. Now, Orla too is defined by chanata, meaning if in year three, fruit blossom, there was a budding, even though I didn't harvest it till after year three, it's called Orla, right? So Orla is totally unchanata. But what's a little complicated is that the counting of Orla years is based on Tishrei, not based on the 15th of Shvat, in the following way. If I planted a tree, let us say, after Shavuos, so there's only a few months until Rosh Hashanah. When Rosh Hashanah comes, I've completed year one. Then I go from Tishrei to Tishrei, year two. Tishrei to Tishrei, year three. But then the Gemara says, after 3 years, a sapling becomes an Ilan. So for Ilanot, I have to wait till Tu Bishvat. So again, let me give you an example. Let's go with this example. I planted a tree after Shavuos. I will tell you how late in the year you can plant it. I'll get to that in a moment. I planted a tree after Shavuos. So when Tishrei comes, year one. Next Tishrei comes, year two. Next Tishrei comes, year three. But since it's now an Ilan, year three essentially is extended. It goes from Tishrei to Tishrei to Tu Bishvat. So any Chanata that occurred prior to the 15th of Shvat in year four has the status of Orla, has the status of Orla, and cannot be eaten. Okay, so this is already a complicated idea because you're not using Tu Bishvat to count the Orla years. You're counting the Orla years based on Tishrei, but you're using Tu Bishvat to determine the termination of the Orla based on after you've completed your third year. Now, how late in a year can I plant to get the benefit of a year? So the Gemara says it actually has to be 44 days before Rosh Hashanah. And let me explain why that's an important cheshbon. Chazal are mishayer that a fruit tree typically needs 2 weeks to fully root in the ground. So it's not deemed planted till 2 weeks have passed. And in order for a year to count, it must be planted in the ground for at least 30 days. So it happens to be fortuitously, there are no accidents, that this is the 15th of Av, meaning to say the rule is the following. Huh? That's right. No. To what? To Bishvat. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, there is connections. That's true. But here is the rule, therefore. If I plant my tree on or before Tu B'Av, I get year one when Rosh Hashanah comes. If, however, I plant my tree after Tu B'Av, since I didn't have 30 days of planting, because minus the 2 weeks, it hasn't been planted for 30 days, I don't get a year. I have to start my year on Tishrei, and I go from Tishrei to Tishrei, Tishrei to Tishrei, Tishrei to Tishrei. Now, here is the very, very interesting question. It turns out that when I plant after Tu B'Av, by the time I reach my third Tishrei, I've already waited a little bit more than 3 years. So do I have to wait till Tu Bishvat? In other words, here's the problem. The case of the Gemara, where I have to wait till Tu Bishvat, is when I'm taking advantage of the leniency of year one being a short year. So I didn't have 3 complete years. So when I didn't have 3 complete years, I'm mechuyev to extend it to Tu Bishvat. But where I plant my tree, after the 15th of Av, and I do not get the benefit of a short year, and my 3 years of Orla go from Tishrei to Tishrei, from Tishrei to Tishrei, from Tishrei to Tishrei, and I've already had 3 full years, it's a machlokas rishayim. Some rishayim say after the third Tishrei, the peirot are going to be mutter, and there is no need to wait. Others say you still have to wait to Tu'ishva. Now, you're going to have a similar Shaila in reverse, where you planted your tree before Tu B'Shvat. So you'll see that if you count 3 years, right? So when Tishrei comes, it's year one. Tishrei comes year two. Tishrei comes year three. It's not yet 3 full years, but it'll be 3 full years before Tu B'Shvat comes. In other words, the machlokas is there a chiyuv to wait to Tu B'Shvat when you already have 3 full years? That's a machlokas rishayim. But once again, that is the significance of Rosh Hashanah Leilanot. Yeah. No, the budding is the beginning of the fruit itself, I believe. From that bud, there will be the... Yeah. That's correct. So these are machloksim, lagavi orla. And of course, the big shaila that orla applies today is that the halakha is that when you replant a sapling that has been uprooted, you got to start the orla clock over again. And that's a major, major problem for home gardeners, because typically today, very, very few people plant a seed, right? You're not Johnny Appleseed. I mean, nobody's going to plant an apple tree by putting seed in the ground. Typically, if somebody wants to have a fruit tree, because Shemitah, you can't do this anyway. Shemitah, this won't be Nogeya. But if you want a fruit tree, you buy a tree and you plant it. Now, the tree might be an old tree. The tree might be 5 years old or whatever it would be. But when you replant it, you may have to observe all the laws of Orla. And it's very tricky because it depends on how much soil, meaning if there's like a ball of soil attached, and that could keep the tree alive for a month or so. So that's not called a replanting, and the Orla clock is not restarted. If, on the other hand, it does not have sufficient soil, or you just have roots, exposed roots, then the replanting would require the counting of Orla again. And that is a very, very significant shaila that people have to deal with when they buy trees. Because Orla can be constantly restarted. Every time the tree is moved, every time the tree is replanted, there may be potentially a shaila that the laws of Orla apply. Now, as I indicated, Orla is a halacha that even applies in Chutz La'aretz. However, it has certain leniencies in Chutz La'aretz that we don't have in Eretz Yisrael, and that is suffik. Meaning in Eretz Yisrael, I need a hashkacha. In addition to Truma and Meiser, I need a certification that this is not Orla. Right? The hashkacha tells me that. In Chutz La'aretz, if you do not know if the fruit is Orla or not, you are permitted to be lenient. So that's why I could buy an apple in Chutz La'aretz. Trumas and Masros is obviously not a problem because it's Chutz La'aretz, but the problem is, but maybe it's Orla. The short answer is, Safek Orla in Chutz La'aretz is permitted. And even though, this is really inconsistent with the general rule, even though we normally say, Safek d'oraisa l'chumra, that a shaila of a Torah law, you have to be strict, and this is a safek d'oraisa. But the Gemara tells us in Kedushin that part of the halacha l'moshe misinai is that in this case of safek, you're allowed to be lenient. So that's part of the halacha, that it is an exception to halacha l'moshe misinai. In truth, I think most fruit-bearing trees do not produce fruit for a few years. So it'll be relatively rare for a fruit to come to market with that is halakhically orla. But again, if trees are moved around and replanted, that could happen, right? You can have an already producing apple tree that got moved in a nursery. And theoretically, that could be an orla problem. And yet, as I say, in Chutz La'aretz, halakhal Moshe Misinai is Suffolk Orla's mother. Okay, so this is really the halachic context of Rosh Hashanah Leilanot. It's not necessarily a mystical or deeply spiritual idea. And yet we do find, particularly among the Mekubalim, the Talmidim of the Arizal, that Tu B'Shvat got invested with a very, very deep and mystical significance. There is a Tu B'Shvat Seder. In fact, I mean, there are many Tu B'Shvat Seders people are conducting. I myself will be conducting a Tu B'Shvat Seder for Yibonet. That's an organization in town, Sunday night. And there are a lot of different themes of a Tu B'Shvat Seder. Truth is, this has become a favorite, actually, of the reform movement, environmentalist groups. They use it to celebrate the environment, which, again, is actually a legitimate theme of Tu B'Shvat. But it also has a lot of Kabbalistic ideas. First of all, number one, the idea of eating the fruit of Eretz Yisrael, to have gratitude to Hashem, both for the land and for the fruit. And the fact that Hashem made so many colors, so many textures, so many different tastes. And this is very important, the Chavos HaLevavos says, this is not necessary for our survival. In order to live, I could live off tasteless mush with no color at all. So why did God create such diversity, such beauty, such pleasure? It's really Hashem's chesed to us. So that enhances gratitude. Hashem didn't just give us, you know, the bread and water that we needed to survive. Hashem gave us color and texture and smell and taste, right? So one theme is, of course, Hakaras HaTov, gratitude, both for Eretz Yisrael and for the chesed of Hashem generally. Another theme is, Kabbalistically, that since the initial sin that caused the death to come to humanity was the sin of eating from the Eitz Hadas, when we eat with the proper brachot and the proper kavana, we are making a tikkun for the chait of the Eitz Hadas. There's another Kabbalistic idea that in all food there is a holy spark, and we're releasing the sparks of holiness into the world. So because of this, the Mekubalim gave different configurations of the types of fruits that you should eat. Obviously, the seven species of Eretz Yisrael are going to be very important. But in addition, they augmented the seven species, although these lists overlap, with eating 12 different types of fruits. In what, now, why 12? Because if you take the Shem Havaya, Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei, those four letters can be arranged in 12 different combinations because two of the letters are the same. And the Mekubalim were able to identify in ways that we don't really fathom how certain fruits elicit a shefa from one of the combinations of the Shem Havaya. So therefore, they correlate 12 fruits to the 12 serufim, serufim are combinations, of the Shem Havaya. And as they eat each fruit, there are verses from Tanakh and Mishnah and Zohar that talk about the characteristics of those fruits. Now that's the short form, which uses 12 fruits. There is a long form from Rav Chaim Vital, who actually talks about 30 fruits. And the way the 30 fruits work is they are divided into three groups of 10. Group one are 10 fruits with inedible peels and edible insides. An example would be nuts, a walnut, an orange, a banana. The peel is inedible. The inside is edible. The second group is reversed. The fruit is edible from the outside, but there's an inner pit that you can't eat. An example would be a peach or an apricot. And he has 10 of those. The third group are fruits that are totally edible, inside, outside. They may have tiny little seeds, but they're kind of ignored. An example would be grapes. Figs, right? Dates belongs to the pit fruit, but a fig belongs to the totally edible fruit. And Rav Chaim Vital develops a whole complicated thesis that these are ascending levels of Kedusha. Because the inner, the edible part of the fruit represents the holiness, the light of God that's put into that fruit. And when there is a peel, that is a blockage. But for category two, the holiness breaks free of the blockage and the pit is inside. And category three, the light of God is all permeating. So there's not even a pit, there's not even a blockage. And therefore you're ascending in spiritual levels. So once again, 30 fruit may be a little bit much for most of us, but there's actually a Seder of 30 fruits. And then in the Tu B'Shvat Seder, there are also four cups of wine, which start with pure white, is cup one. Cup two is white with a little red. Cup three is half-half. And cup four is mainly red with a tiny bit of white that obviously you're not going to be able to see. And that represents, now some say it represents the seasons. The white is the snow or the dormancy of the winter. The little bit of red is the beginning of spring, which Tu B'Shvat celebrates. The half and half is the summer. And the all red is the richness of fall when everything comes to its final fruition. Change of seasons. And this also refers to the personality of a human being, that there are times in life in which we are dormant and uninspired. And then there are times that we get more fiery and passionate. Also white and red, white can represent mercy and red can represent din. So there are many, many symbols, the four kosos, the 12 types of peros, the 30 types of peros, the different psukim that you recite. Now, all of this is not from the Gemara. All of this is relatively late. It really dates from the generation after the Arizal. And in fact, the origin of this Tu B'Shvat Seder, although Rav Chaim Vital talks about eating the fruit of Eretz Yisrael, but a whole Seder with four cups, the origin is from a Sefer Chemdas Hayomim. Now, Chemdas Hayomim is one of the most interesting Sfarim in Jewish history, because it is a virtual treasury of all sorts of Kabbalistic customs and rituals. Really, an encyclopedia, it is like a primary source for many Kabbalistic processes and minhagim. And yet, there's been a recurring accusation for hundreds and hundreds of years that it is a product of followers of Shabtai Tzvi. And people have found in it various references to Sabbatean doctrines, which of course would make it a puzzle safer. And this is a debate that goes on to the present day, in which some have questioned the whole ritual of the Tu B'Shvat Seder as being derived from Shabtai Tzvi. But again, many do, say again? Yeah, it's been separated. Obviously it's been separated from that. Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be worse than yoga or other things which may have had their origin in Eastern religions. But I think now what has happened with the Tu B'Shvat Seder is that in the yeshiva world, the B'chlal is not widely followed. Although in Or Shemech, you know, we have a Tu B'Shvat Seder. Chassidim have a tish. They don't necessarily follow this order, but they have a tish. So really, I have to say that the Tu B'Shvat Seder has become very, very popular with Jewish environmentalists and the reform movements. So if you look at Sefaria for Tu B'Shvat Seders, you know, almost every one is from the Reform. But as I say, that shouldn't puzzle it. I mean, it has authentic, well, Jewish makorot subject to the controversy I just mentioned about Chemdas Hayamim. And there's deep Kabbalistic meanings to it. And we know that a human being is compared to a tree. So the renewal of the tree is about a renewal of the human being as well. So it is a very, very beautiful time to be grateful to Hashem and to thank Hashem for the renewal after the dormancy of the winter. Because once again, just as the ground has its winters, the human personality has its winters as well. And the message of Tu B'Shvat is that even if it's the middle of the winter and you don't see any fruit, the sap is inside producing things. That's a very powerful message. Within us are all sorts of spiritual powers that can continue to flourish even when it's not yet perceptible to the naked eye.